Times like these, people want to get high. Real high and real fast. And this is gonna do it. And make us rich.
I mean, what? People going crazy over this? I mean, really, it looked like cracked off pieces of soap.
The Colombians and the Dominicans have shown us the way. And the shit is large. But we gonna do it differently. Gone are the days of selling on the street corners. You change the product, you change the marketing strategy. I've seen the future, y'all. And its name is the Carter.
Oh, hold up, Nino. The Carter Apartments, man, that joint is big. What's up?
Yo, baby, we talking about combinate and consolidate. That's what up.
You're not thinking of taking over the Carter.
Yeah, we taking over the Carter. We gonna bum rush the whole damn thing. Now, just imagine. If the tenants cooperate, oh, it's lovely. I mean, they become loyal customers. They don't? Fuck it, it's like in Beirut. They become living hostages. You're gonna set up a lab here to make the product. Kareem, you can hook up the computer system. Watch out for the workers, the money, and the product. The Dutter man, Keisha, we need a security force. Ward off the rival crews to screen out the customers. We also need lookouts. Here, 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 and here. Alert us of 5-0. One place to make the product. One place to collect our money. We will own this fucking city.
You're a genius, man. Pure,
unadulterated, man. Would you please shut the fuck up before you have a seizure?
Yo, man, suck my dick.
Welcome to another edition of the Madcap Movie Review Podcast. It's your boy Derek.
I'm Sean.
I'm CEO.
And today we're breaking down a classic, New Jack City. So before we get into this movie, I just want to touch on the star power that was in this thing. Like I was mentioning before we started recording, it's like a time capsule of the star power of that time. You had what, Wesley Snipes, Alan Payne, Ice-T, Mario Van Peebles, who directed and acted in it. Who else was in this thing? Chris Rock, of course. The Dutter Man himself, Bill Nunn, the Dutter Man. Oh, Christopher Williams had the killer song on the soundtrack.
Bill Cobbs, the old man.
Oh, yeah, Bill Cobbs. That man was, I loved him in this movie. What?
Dude, yes, but that's not it. You got Vanessa Williams.
Michael Michelle.
So his Michael Michelle, yeah, yeah. Nick Ashford, Keith Sweat. Another thing that we were talking about was all the different singing groups that were in the movie, like LaVert and Troop. So, man, this movie was definitely stacked.
Speaking on that, I guess, is the music almost like another character in the movie to y'all? Because it plays such an essential part of threading things together.
I definitely agree. That's what makes a good movie. If you got that banging soundtrack and score that complements what you're actually seeing scene to scene in the movie, that just makes the movie another level, in my opinion.
Most definitely. I like that first scene, now that you're talking about the music, that first scene when they're going into the club.
Mm-hmm.
They got the show playing and Flavor Flav is on the mic emceeing, and you got Fab Five Freddy up there and everything like that. It just really, you felt the energy, like we're setting up something big. We're about to let you know everybody, who everyone is, their roles, how important this guy Nino Brown is, that he can walk into the club like, yo, you gonna check me too? And my man's just gonna back off. You know, everything went perfectly. The music, the setting, it was perfect at that part.
Yeah, that universe was set up very well.
Before we jump into this movie, let's give a brief synopsis for the one or two people out there who maybe have not seen the movie.
How dare you?
Right. All right. So it's set in the late 80s, and drug tycoon Nino Brown, played by Wesley Snipes, and his crew, known collectively as the Cash Money Brothers, have rapidly risen to the top of the New York City narcotics trade. So under Nino's leadership, the drug operation grew into a multi-million dollar operation. They were making $1 million a week at the time. And they're being pursued by Scotty and Nick, played by Ice-T and Judd Nelson, who are two police officers that know their way around the streets. So they're street smart and they're trying to take them down. But to do it, they've got to go undercover and maybe bend the rules a little bit. I want to talk about some fun facts that I found while looking into this movie. And the most obvious one is that this is the first movie that Mario Van Peebles directed. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got one hell of a resume. Let's get to the next fun fact about this. Talking about Chris Rock, the part of Pookie originally went to Martin Lawrence. But Robin Harris was Martin's mentor. And around that time, that was when Robin Harris died, right? So Martin was having a tough time with it, and he just gave up the role. And that's how Chris Rock got the part. So do you think Martin would have been a better Pookie than Chris Rock?
I think he would have been a good Pookie, just based off some things in the past. So I think he would have been a good version of Pookie. I don't know if he could have did it better than Chris. Chris blew this role up.
He did.
And like you said, bro, like he kind of looked the part. Chris Rock is a skinny dude. Just straight up. Just slender. And like his whole bop and demeanor. It's hard for me to see anybody else being it. Even though I, in my head, I know Martin can definitely pull it off. But it just seems so much organic for Chris Rock to do it. Like he was definitely killing his part. I don't, probably not better, but and as I think about it, I don't think it would have had the same gravity because we don't talk about Martin and his acting abilities. Chris Rock has actually done some things outside of himself in on multiple occasions. So like I said, like we talked about on More Money with Marlon, you can get it there. But it's like if you had Kadeem in that guy, it goes up a level. And I think Chris Rock had it at the appropriate level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a tough one. I feel like, I mean, the part of Pookie, Chris Rock was already funny with it. The one thing that Martin might have been able to do was make it even funnier. Because at that point, Martin was just on fire. So maybe Martin would have been able to make it a little bit funnier. Because he was killing it at that point. Like, everything he touched would just have you busting your guts.
It was gold. Yep. Yeah. I can see that. I can see that. It's just some of those dramatic moments. Because I can't really think of a real emotional moment that I've ever seen Martin in. Like, you talk about emotional moments. I mean, he cried a little bit in Bad Boys 2 when his sister went missing.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, when him and Gina broke up.
Oh my gosh.
But outside of that, those couple of scenes when Pookie was going through withdrawal, or even when he was relapsing, I don't know how Martin would have did that.
There you go. That is the part right there. I don't think Martin had pulled off the rehab montage, you know, from the one crack vial going into the pants to the looking at the glass dick to being in there talking about it, that simulating them titties. Like Chris Rock was perfect for that, and I don't think he could have did anything better.
I don't know if it's one scene that I would have liked to see Martin do as Pookie, it would have probably been that scene directly after he got the turkey from Nino Brown,
and
he was down there. About to cuss out that chick. Hell, about to beat her.
That turkey no more. Oh, jump for that last guy.
Why I gotta be owing you? I was prom queen of King High School. This is beneath me.
Damn, you used to be the prom queen. Now you ain't nothing but the prom fiend. Look at you now. Look at you. Hey!
Hey, what? Hey, what? Did I hook you up? Then I walked down 6 blocks to get a pipe from the iridium up on couldn't speak English, but still trying to beat me out of fiber. Then I spit your old ass mother this morning after a bitch called me a homeless bastard. Right.
Yeah.
Then you add all that up and the fact that I'm a man that can beat your motherfucking ass. I see his macho.
Ass chump beat up a girl of his in turkey. Use a poor excuse for a brother.
Ah, shit, man. Fuck. Oh, shit, it's a cop, man. It's a cop. Man, shut up.
Man, shut up. Shut up.
Oh, my God.
don't shut up, I'm gonna blow your brains out.
Come on, man, don't hurt me, man.
Shut up.
I know I was wrong being on that girl, man, but this crack shit, man, it's got me, man. I don't got no control over it, man. I try to kick, man. That shit just be calling me, man. Be calling me, man. I just gotta go to it. Need help, man.
Come on, man.
Next fun fact. So Wesley Snipes actually got this role because of the part he played in Michael Jackson's Bad video. So the writer of New Jack City saw him in that video. Who wrote this? Barry Michael Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Saw him in the Bad video, or a short film. It was really like a short film, right?
Yep.
And wrote the part specifically for him.
Mm.
So, I mean, that was next level. And when I look back at Bad, I was like, I didn't even realize at the time that Bad did come before New Jack City. I didn't even realize it. I remember thinking, like, looking back at it as an older person, I remember thinking, man, they had Wesley Snipes in Bad? Like, how'd they pull that off?
Yep. Yep. Right.
So Ice-T got the part because Mario Van Peebles heard him talking shit to somebody in the club bathroom and decided that he liked them. And That's all it took. He's like, yo, I like that guy, man. I like the flavor that he coming with and talking this shit to this random stranger in the bathroom. That's my next star of the movie right there. And Ice-T was hesitant about taking it because obviously he had the whole persona, you know, gangster, cop killer, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, as good as New Jack City was for Ice-T's acting career, do you think it essentially ended his rap career? Because after this movie, I don't remember too many albums from him. And then he just went on to be a cop. Just cop.
You're right.
20 years.
But he was in New York Undercover. He had an awesome trilogy of episodes on New York Undercover 2 in season 1 and 1 in season 2. I wouldn't see him as Nino Brown. I think he was appropriate in the role. But then seeing him in this film, and then he did a Law and Order TV movie too. So then New York Undercover, those are the first three times I saw him acting. Mm-hmm. If I was him, I would have gave up rap too.
I was literally about to ask you that too.
That's the bag. Like, you're that good at it. That's the bag. Keep on going at that.
So even if you was like Ice-T and you were a gangster rapper, basically, you built your whole career on, I'm a cop killer, I'm this, I'm that, fuck the police, blah, blah, blah. And they like, hey, bruh, we got this bag over here, but you got to be a cop. You know them guys that you hate? You got to go be a cop. You do it?
You know what? I'm going to say this because it's a few dynamics going on at the same time. And I'm going to tell you, because Ice-T is an intelligent man and he was an actual gangster in the streets, selling drugs, shooting guns, all the shit that's in the movie, Ice-T did in real life. Like, first and foremost, nobody is going to try Ice-T for real. Let's get that out the way.
Word.
Second of all, he quit selling drugs when he almost died. So he was like, you know what? It's time to get out. Ice-T goes into rap. Ice-T gets some records going. Everything is, you know, decent. He never really takes the world over, but he's making some scratch. He's somebody notable, making some money. And he's probably putting in a lot of work, doing tours, all these appearances, all of this work trying to make this money. And then he probably notices around the late 90s that the game is turning and his time is definitely running out as a rapper. So you know what that means? It's time to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what he did. He had to get out the rap game because his time was up, just like when it was up in the crack game. And just becoming a cop, and this particular cop is a little different because it wasn't just the cop who just hates drug dealers. No, this the drug dealer that got his mama killed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit more depth to somebody like Scotty Appleton. He was somebody who became a cop because of the things that happened around him. So his motivation is a little bit different. He wasn't just one of those beat down by the bullies type and grew up to be a cop. Like, nah, he came because he wanted to make a real difference in the community. So I can see how Ice-T would say, okay, that's a cop, but it ain't like an asshole cop. This is going to be some noble shit that I'm going to be riding in on.
Yeah, I could see that. You know, he was one of the few people, like when he was throwing Nino Brown that beating, at the end, I felt like personally invested in that ass whipping. I'm like, get that motherfucker. He killed your mother, dog.
Yo, Judd Nelson, there's two spaces in this film where I just absolutely love Judd Nelson. And it's when Ice-T is beating the shit out of Wesley Snipes. Mm-hmm. And then when the old man kills Nino. Like, and Judd don't even have to say a word. It's just his facial reactions to everything that's going on. A motherfucker just smirking. Or even when they were fighting on the fire escape, Judd was just chilling there. Hey, throw him to me. Throw him to me.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So cavalier. Just throw him out here.
So now that you mention it, Judd Nelson's character, right? What, Nick, I think. What did y'all think about his character?
You know, it's a little weird. His whole existence, it's like it's needed, but it ain't present.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing about this movie that they didn't do was really set up their work relationship or environment. Mm-hmm. Because we don't really get a good feel of what exactly he's doing, why Scotty Appleton is out there, you know, busting his ass on the streets, kicking it with Nino, you know, in the hot tub or in the pool or whatever. But we know he's working with him, but we just don't know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I never really understood what his whole purpose is. I understand why he's there, but, you know, what's going on? Give me a clue. I don't know.
For me, it was more I wanted to know a little bit more about Nick because I feel like, yeah, I feel like the only backstory we really got was just a quick little anecdote once Pookie died. Mm-hmm. You know, Nick had that moment where, you know, he said that I used to be Pookie.
Yeah, but, yeah.
But then there was nothing really after that.
You know, it's like about the same. It wasn't even anything before that. Like if he seen the crack, he should have got a little wide eyed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, or just had like a little flashback or something, and then just come right back. But it's not even a thing, a thought or a consideration.
And the only thing that I can really tie into that to everything that we saw with Nick prior to him saying I used to be Pookie was just him being very adamant about why Pookie was around. Like, right. You're gonna get him killed. It's not a good idea. So when he dropped that, it made sense. I guess I would say I would like to have known a little bit more about Nick the cop and why, like, he was in the position he was, that, you know, nobody wanted to be with him, and his partnership with Scotty was like that last resort.
Yeah.
We understood where Scotty had been and where he is now, but it's just like, yo, we just gonna throw this down on this look white boy cop on you too, but we just don't have no backstory on him. But then again, I don't know how it would have looked for the movie if you did give Nick a little bit more backstory.
See, I think they could have like run their, tried to establish history concurrently, you know, as their role in one story, they got him on some other scenes, like doing what he's doing, and it's all taking place at the same time in the timeline. So you kind of get some backstory established, like they're telling two stories at once. So that way, when they throw him together with Scotty, it's not just, oh yeah, we got this white dude, he's going to be your partner. And for some inexplicable reason, Scotty's mad as hell about it, but we don't know why. That was the part I couldn't get it. Like, why is he flexing on him and, you know, like all of that when he meets him? Like,
right.
For what? They didn't tell us why he was such a bad partner for this guy and why Scotty doesn't like him. And I feel like that relationship has so much potential that if they would have fleshed it out a bit more and established some kind of history. Yeah, that's it. I'm like, it's funny as hell, but damn, why you don't like him, bro?
I was like, do you even know him? Right. You know him?
Yeah, I feel like they definitely needed to work on that part right there.
You know, beforehand, we don't really get a sense that Ice-T is the type of dude, or Scotty is the type of dude that even runs with a partner. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking maybe that's the thing that he was pushing back against, you know, the fact that he was white, he wouldn't understand what this was. Mm-hmm. And I don't really work with nobody. So what you gonna stick me with this dude for? And then he starts shooting the door, and you know, he's crazy as shit. So all right, I guess he gonna work out then. Got some real cowboys.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I really wish they would have gave him some scenes together where they just in the streets, like just kicking some ass. Mm-hmm. You know, just to establish how badass they are.
That was the problem, is because he wasn't actually out on the street. So it was like, what the hell was he doing? What was his real purpose? So I still will always come back to that part. It's like, you just kind of halfway threw him in. I needed a little bit more fleshed out, Mr. Van Peebles.
For sure, for sure. But I mean, but how long did the movie run? I mean, it was like 1 hour and 40, something like that.
Yeah. I guess because, for one, the music takes a lot of time up. Like, there are entire songs. You usually don't get an entire song in a movie. Minute to 45, 2 minutes, half of a montage, and then a fade out into some dialogue. But there were whole set pieces, montages set to entire songs. And that what really lays the movie out to being so long. Because like I said, in the average movie, it probably would have been clipped to about 1:30 of a movie like this. And having some extra scenes for Scotty and Nick probably wouldn't have been that much of a stretch. But it's almost intentional, you know, because the music was such a big part of it. So I could see why they went in that direction, but as a movie watcher, definitely something to be desired.
Right. Getting back to this, before we dig into this movie, there was one thing that I found when I was watching it, and I realized, I was like, yo, Nino Brown is actually the originator of cancel culture.
You're a murderer, Nino! I've seen you kill too many people, Nino!
Cancel that bitch.
I'll
buy another.
Cancel
that bitch.
Yes. I was like, my God, brother.
I'll buy another one.
This motherfucker invented cancel culture back in 1991.
Oh, man, that is such a classic line, bro. I mean, can we just talk about quotables now?
Sometimes I forget about that one because
what happened? Huh? Don't nobody know nothing? Come on now, everybody don't speak at once.
How did motherfuckers get in, huh?
You mean to tell me out of all your motherfuckers in here, don't nobody know jack shit? The Dutter Man.
Dutter.
What happened?
Huh?
Keisha.
I'll be a motherfucker.
Don't nobody know nothing? What up with this? Somebody got to know something was going on. See what I'm saying? Ain't that right, G-Money?
Yeah, I think G-Money definitely knows something.
Yeah, G-Money knows something.
You fucked up. You fucked up big time. You're incapable of running this shit. Sit your $5 ass down before I make change.
Lord, that's a go-to.
Hey, has anyone here ever said that to somebody?
I have.
I have.
You know, I've said that to, you know, folks in my profession before.
Oh, then, hey, let me tell my $5 story real quick.
I'm here for it.
All right. So my girl, right, we was having a little argument one time, and I thought it would be funny, you know, to do a little callback to the movie, just kind of bring some levity to the situation and break the tension. So I don't even remember what we was arguing about, but I looked at her and I tried to say it with the same conviction as Nino Brown in the movie. And I told her to sit her $5 ass down before I made some change. And I remember she looked at me, she just was looking at me for like 10 seconds. And I swear the look on her face was like, I don't know if I'm turned on or I want to punch you in the face. But it literally just killed the argument right there. Like it was just over. She just kind of walked away.
I've actually said rock-a-bye, baby, to some folks.
Oh, I love that line. Yo,
Oh my God.
I remember seeing the movie and my friends in school, like, we was talking about, like, Rockabye, baby. We was all like mocking the line and everything, trying to do it. That line stood out to me hard. Like, oh my God.
Only thing about Rockabye, baby, in the movie was why she didn't just say it in the scene. Why did they have to take the clip when she said it the first time and play it when she shot him?
Yeah.
That was a little weird. I wanted to see her say it. It would have just felt like something a little bit more like Rockabye. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing, man. But, you know, I ain't the right feel.
It took a little bit of the juice out of it. It did.
So I got a couple more. Another one that I've said, it was what Nino said to G Money before he told him to sit his $5 ass down. So as great as that line is, you fucked up big time. You're incapable of running shit.
Yeah. Like, rate the hell out of you.
Yo,
in front of company.
Yo, there you go. Yo,
in front of somebody,
you tell them some shit like that. You fucked up big time. You're incapable of running shit, doing shit. Like, put whatever spin you want on that. Quick to get a motherfucker's attention. So that one, and not something that I repeat, but anytime I hear it in this movie, I laugh. When Scotty is beating the shit out of Nino, and he grabs the gun, he's like, I want to shoot you so bad, my dick's hard.
Gonna wear this and sell poison to our people. You ain't shit. Nothing to me. That teacher you killed, that was my mother. These are people you squash and kill with no retribution. Get your ass up. This ain't business, bitch. This is personal. I want to shoot you so bad. My dick's hard.
Coming through, excuse me.
That ain't had all of it in his face. Oh, I want to shoot you so hard. Like, yo.
That looked like it was really personal, son.
That's a lot of adrenaline right there. Oh. Your dick get hard, you want to kill somebody. Like,
that sounds like some Mike Tyson shit. I was literally listening to a Mike Tyson interview the other day, and he was like, when he thinks about fighting, it arouses him. Mm-hmm. When he's about to fight somebody. That's literally some Mike Tyson shit, when the thought of inflicting bodily harm on somebody gets you aroused. And that's just scary. One of the coldest lines in the movie was the old man right before he kills Nino Brown. Idolater, your soul is required in hell. I was like, that's the coldest.
Your soul is required. Like, you had an order for this shit to go to hell. Like, somebody told you in the mail, Mr. Old Man, sir, Nino Brown is required in hell.
The system is the greatest in the world. Proud to be an American. Hi, Mom.
Idolater, your soul is required in hell.
That was a sick one, man. I go back to the Chris Rock one, though. You know, what you got, some lack in them titties? Like, yo, dead.
Yo.
Dead.
Low-key, Pookie was dropping some lines here and there, man.
Keep calling me, man.
Keep calling me. Scotty, help me. I'm going to die.
Like, start that glass shit. Dick. That nigga was sucking his teeth and shit. Yeah. Bro. Chris Rock, five for that, man.
Yeah, that motherfucker. Chris Rock was just like, that's why he embodied that role, man. That dude had the gift of gab, the motor mouth thing going.
Yeah.
He had it all, man. Especially in the beginning. In the beginning of the movie, when they opened up with him talking to Scotty, and they're having that negotiation, and they're doing all the slick talk and everything.
Yeah.
I think that was the perfect intro. It was perfect because it embodied the era. Like, it put the era in the capsule for you. Like, if you watch that, you're like, yeah, that's 90s flavor right there.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that he was already scheming because Ice-T looked like a mark. All the gold on, all the chains, the rings. Then he just got the bag full of money. He like, this motherfucker finna get robbed. Like, it took me a minute to figure out that he was sizing him up, but he kept looking at everything else and kept talking. I'm like, oh. I was like, okay. But talking about that part real quick, Chris Rock or Pookie may have been the slowest bike rider of all time.
Yo, yes.
By far, in any movie or human existence. You know, my son could be him on a bike race. Like, that shit is ridiculous.
Yeah, you get hawked down by a dude on foot and you're on a bike. Yeah, you deserve everything you got coming to you after that, bro.
Straight up.
And he took the worst route, too. Like, going down them steep stairs.
Oh, my God.
Going towards the train tracks. Like, what was he thinking? But, all that open real estate to ride that bike and get away from this man. And you choose to go down the steepest stairs in history into an oncoming train.
Crack head.
So, what's something about the movie, like an element of the movie that immediately caught your attention?
The very beginning.
Hanging dude off the bridge.
Yeah. And we just talked about how Mo Money started. Like, you start this film, you got me in the vibe with the music. I'm sitting up there, okay, all right. And next thing I know, I'm like, is that somebody hanging off a bridge? And like,
I'm like, yo,
and I'm like, I mean, they ain't gonna let him go. Next thing you know, boom. So if you talking about a movie grabbing your attention from the beginning, oh yeah, y'all pull me all the way in. Y'all already hooked me on the music, and now you use the music to pull me into this very immediate and tone setting first scene. So yeah. The way the movie started immediately drew me in.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you the exact moment within that scene where it got me. Because dude is hanging. He's like, Nino, help me. And, you know, it's like, around here, the brothers like to get paid. I said, talking to a white man.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, ooh, I got to watch this brother. Right there. It's like, that's it. You know, that's your mentality from jump. Like, I'm trying to figure out, like, if there was some metaphorical things that were basically being said in that scene. Because I felt to set up Nino's psyche on how he thinks and just kind of, like, bringing it full circle all the way to the end when he's in court talking about why everybody is guilty. You know, but that really sets the tone for the type of dude he is. It's like, you might be a white dude, but we tired of getting fucked over by white guys. We like to get paid. This ain't slavery times. And y'all not giving us anything. So we're going to take what we can get. And that's what the movie turns into. It's a story of somebody who didn't have anything, no opportunity, and had to just take what he can get.
See, I want to come back to that. But first, I'm going to tell you what jumped out at me is the colorful outfits and the party scenes, right? Because I love watching party scenes in old school movies just because I remember being in the basement with my boys and you working on your dance moves before you go to the house party or something like that. Y'all trying to get y'all little step together.
Yeah.
And back then, you know, if you was a crew, everybody was trying to match in some kind of way. You know, you try to coordinate your little outfits and all that. And everybody's rocking the Kangol. I still got a Kangol in my closet right now.
Ain't nothing wrong with it.
Hell no. That joint's eternal, baby. I rock one of them joints like every month and just find a reason to put it on, even if I'm just walking around the house. So the outfits and the party scenes jumped out to me. But CL, I want to go to what you was talking about with when he said that to the white man, the fact that he said it to a white dude, it makes me think about his crew, CMB. And the thing I liked about them is that they established them as not being afraid of shit. Because normally in these movies, when the mob comes through, when the Italian mob comes around, it's like, oh man, like in Harlem Nights, it's time to pick up and go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we gotta bounce. We can't stay here. We can't compete with these guys. But they was like, Nino in particular was like, nah, fuck that. This is ours. We taking this. So I loved that the fact that he was willing to go to war with them cats. And then when they hit him, he hit him back and took out the head. He just chopped the head off of the snake and was like, nah, that's it. No more competition.
Yeah. That was a big look. Like you said, standing up to that mob boss is an important thing in this illicit world that New Jack City is setting. Because we know, whether it's, like you said, Harlem Nights, whether it be shit, Power, like, you can name it. There's always somebody in it's like, you guys are doing your thing, but we're supposed to have a piece. It's like, why? Mm-hmm. Who said you were supposed to get a piece? Like, I built this from scratch. You weren't here. You didn't support. You didn't hand me a dollar to put this together. You didn't put in any work. You ain't shoot not one gun to help me build this empire, but you would just want to take a piece. And it's like, we're off that. This is totally rogue operation. You can't even get no tax off this. So yeah, man, that's real important.
And I think it was also important to the rest of the movie because it establishes Nino's strength, right? The fact that he's not scared of anybody. But as you know, like with everyday life, your greatest strength is normally your weakness, right? It can also be your weakness. You ain't scared of shit, that means you're going to do some stupid shit. And eventually it's going to bite you in the ass because you ain't scared. So you just like F it. And I think it also played up the importance of G Money in this movie. It also showed how important he was because he was that balance for Nino. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever Nino started getting too far out of bounds, you know, the world is mine. I run this. I own everything. Basically, I'm King Kong out this bitch. G Money like, nah, bro, come on. We here now. Like, chill out. Focus on the goal. You know, and without G Money, Nino Brown was basically a loose cannon.
Yo, without a character like G-Money, how successful do you think Nino would have been? Because I do agree. Like, G-Money is needed in this film. Like, he is just as ruthless. We immediately see that when him and Keisha kill a motherfucker in broad daylight.
scene was cold.
And he's sitting up there talking about it while they're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Woo! Kill him, fucking brought there, like
talking about it like my man could still hear him from the graveyard.
Like, dude, my man is giving play-by-play during a murder in broad daylight. So,
bro,
you know, G-Money is as ruthless as Nino Brown is, but I feel like he's a little bit more level-headed. And like you said, he can bring him down, bring him back to reality. But then I feel like Nino gets to a point where, just like you said, you know, he's ruthless. You know, he has that great strength, but then it becomes his weakness as well because he kind of goes overboard with it. And with it, he alienates his brother. So, yeah, I just kind of flip it back on that question. Like, do you think Nino Brown could have been as successful without a G Money beside him?
That is a little interesting. I don't think so because they are so yin and yang in the movie. And on top of that, the one thing that G Money definitely does that most number twos don't is he definitely does not let his actual pride stop him from doing business. Now, it does get him fucked over in the end, but he did swallow his pride just a little bit because he knew what was most important, which was to maintain the actual relationship. Now, Nino was wrong, you know, especially with old girl. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was...
Unica.
that definitely was a thing, but I'm looking at the situation and I'm like, from like the half a second that they make eye contact, if I'm G Money, I'm like, Nino, you want this bitch? I'm done right now. Like, I'm done. Like, as soon as she made eye contact and I see both of them, like, no, I'm out of this. You can have her. I'll go get another one. I would have been more like Nino. And another thing is they're both flawed. So that actually makes it even more interesting because G Money likes to party. You know, going back to the beginning of the movie where he was talking about getting his wood waxed every night, even a couple times during the day off the crack. He's telling you, like, man, I like to get down. I like to kick it. You know, them like, I'm loving getting money. Like, you know, like, bro, we got business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I feel like if he would have taken Nino a little bit more serious about that part of things, he would not have let the party lifestyle be the thing that he kind of loved the most. And that was what she represented, was him having fun. This, yeah, I'm having fun, my little baddie right here. I'm like, yeah, that's what I love to do. And that's what he was attached to. Nino was attached to the business. He was kicking it, sucking, licking all on shorty until the car got knocked off. What? Get off me. Hold on. I got something to do. That's what he was attached to. So you can see their emotions get attached to two different things. So it's a real yin and yang. And because they're flawed, you know, the things are going to happen naturally. This is a very human story, just to encapsulate my point.
Well, I want to touch on what CL was talking about with G Money. He was saying that G Money's problem was that he liked the party. He liked the party lifestyle, right? See, I don't think it was just that he liked the party. I think it was more that he liked whatever it was, be it the party or whatever. He mainly just cared about doing it with his people. Like, and that was his strength, but that was also his weakness. So when he saw that, like, yo, you're breaking up the group, like that night of the New Year's party, when Nino just starts going off, right? And he's talking shit to his girl, Selena, that she can't have kids. And then he starts scheming on Unica, that, you know, G-Money's girl. G-Money didn't care about the girl, per se. He cared that you did this to me. I'm supposed to be your brother. That's what got him. It wasn't that you took my girl, per se. Is that she was mine, and you, my brother, of all people, you took her. That's what got him.
True.
You know, he was too focused on, because he was so focused on keeping the group together, it blinded him to everything else. Like, when Nino's up there screaming, the world is mine, everything is mine, don't forget about the brothers now. That was his first thought in his head. Don't forget about the brothers. Like, we part of this too now. Yeah, he's always focused on minding Nino and minding everyone but himself. So he wasn't really able to look out for himself the way he should have. I think that was his biggest problem. He's too focused on the crew and not enough on himself.
That's a good point. And even the trust in putting a former crackhead in the drug factory, that was just showing a little too much love. You know, you was a little too forgiving. Yeah, you might not be able to work on these computers, but you definitely not going to the drugstore. Something like, nah, I'm not putting you in the manufacturer. And of course, that became one of the downfalls. And it's almost predicted by Nino. He's like, bro, you fuck me, this is on you. And at every turn, the one that was letting him down was G Money. So, like I said, flawed human beings.
Yeah.
Very real.
Well, going off of that, do you think that Nino Brown killed him more because he let them get infiltrated, or more because out of mercy because he saw that G Money was becoming a crackhead?
A little bit of both.
Yeah, I would say a little bit of both too.
Because it was about to be over for him in a minute. And he definitely seen the end of any real relationship with him. And I don't even think Nino wanted to see him become a crackhead.
He didn't. I don't think so either.
So I think that's part of, like, the tears that you see. Like, I don't even want to see you like this, but this is what it's come to. And if it continues anymore, you're going to do harm to me, and I can't have it.
There you go. And that's where I was going to go. Nino said, I'm on the run. I can't take you with me, G. If I take you with me, then you're going to jeopardize my shit. Now, on his own, Nino was able to, I mean, he still got his ass whooped, arrested, and all this other shit. But considering who Nino is, and what, he only got a year? They only sentenced him to a year?
Probation was he after a year.
Yeah, a year in probation. But the thing about it, that wouldn't have happened, I don't think, if he would have took G with him. You know, especially in the condition that G was in. I kind of feel like G would have gave, if they would have got caught, G would have gave that motherfucker up.
Of course. Between the crack and just looking at the things that Nino did to him, up until that point, I think he was just about to be out on Nino altogether. So he definitely would have sold him out.
Already
got him a nice little deal.
Already
able to cooperate the story.
He had already set up that side deal with Scotty. So we already saw that he was capable of doing something against Nino. So yeah, I think that killing of G was a little bit of both.
Whatever happened to Am I My Brother's Keeper, huh? You know what happened to it. The world is mine. Remember that? Everything is mine. Everything! Even my woman. Hey, is that what this is about? That fucking skeezer? You think I give a fuck about her? Fuck that whole bitch! I don't give a fuck about her! You know, man, it ain't about her. It's about us. I love you, man. Dino. You embarrass me, man! In front of all them people, you treated me like I was soft, man. You treated me like I was spineless. We built this shit! You didn't do this shit by yourself! You forgot about me, man. Your brother. What has this done to us, G? Huh? Keisha? Dead. The Dunner man? Dead. Let's just make it like it was. Man, let's be a family, man. Let's make it like it was, me and you, man. We, man, fuck them cars and them bitches and them, man, all that shit, man. Fuck that shit, man! Let's do us, man, me and you. Let's be a family again. I'm on the run, G. You can never go back the way it was. But I'll tell you how we can make it right. CMB. CMB! Man, we all we got. Am I my brother's keeper? Yes, I am. Oh!
Yeah, I think that whole moment was powerful, that he ended them with the same mantra. That was the crew, you know, that was the crew's mantra. Am I my brother's keeper? Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I love you so much that if anybody got to take you out, I'd rather it be me.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, is for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're like, it's going to hurt me a lot more than it hurts you.
Hurt you. Right.
So that makes me wonder, like, what do you think about Nino as a leader?
Mm. Motivates by fear. Like, there's something in the past that bonds all of them together. Mm-hmm. But they're obviously a tight group. They consider themselves, they have a family-type bond. But, I mean, you can see it from the look on everybody's face when, after the Carter is exposed, and we're at that scene where Nino drops that famous "sit your $5 ass down" line. I feel like it's fear in that room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody from Kareem Akbar to Dunham Man to even who I feel like is the most ruthless person in the bunch, not named Nino, Keisha. Because let's be real, Keisha don't give nam fuck.
Not at all.
But everybody had fear in that moment. You know, it was love. Tight group, but I feel that as a leader, he motivates by fear.
Yeah,
definitely. That definitely makes sense, because everyone did not want to cross Nino. Mm-hmm. And even when G Money decides to do the deal, you know, of course, when he tries to bring it to Nino, Nino's like, I don't know this dude. He's like, nah, get out of here. Like, I'm not with that.
What the fuck is up?
Play ball, that's what's up. Check. Check, money. Shut up. Check. Double check. Check. Come on, D.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Y'all need to see G Money.
G Money.
Yo,
what's up with these elbows, man?
Sucker.
Hold up, I don't know.
Yo, G. You know him?
Score.
Oh,
hold up. I know him. He's cool. He's all right.
He's back, Playboy. He's back. Yeah, yeah. How you feeling, G Money, my man? What's up with your man?
Pat him down. Pat him down.
Almost like that.
Word.
I mean, what the fuck is this, man? What's up,
what
man?
The fuck is up is I don't know you. That's what's up. Now, I know you're supposed to be my man's new contact, but I don't trust you. So since you interrupted my game, get the fuck out.
You ain't even got to be...
Hold up.
Mr. Money, will you please escort Mr. Washington off the court? Take him down the block. And if this dreadlock bumbarass even blinks wrong, you lullaby his ass.
And he was still hesitant. Like, you could tell, like, man, it's a little messed up that he won't bring him in. But you know what? I'm just going to hide myself completely and try to get this done. Because if Nino comes and finds this out, he's definitely going to kill. So, yes. A lot of motivation by fear. I will say this. He has a lot of business savvy and very much so a real CEO mindset, because the line in the movie that gets me is when they're talking about bringing in the crack and he says, you change the product, you change the marketing strategy. I said, what? We're talking about crack. But we're here talking about marketing strategies, distribution. And I'm like, okay, this dude has a real business mindset. And so I really commend him as being a savvy leader. I'm not a fan of the whole fear thing, but to bring that much thought into the entire process, it was something that that really resonated with me that I felt like is necessary for any company.
Yeah, I agree with that. That was the part that jumped out at me about him, was that I saw him as a visionary. He was one of those guys that if you put him in a boardroom, he would excel. You know, if he got that opportunity, he could easily be the head of a Fortune 500 company because he was able to see things from a macro perspective, so to speak, you know, and not get caught up in all the details. Now, my problem with him was that, like a lot of these guys, he fell victim to the stereotypical trappings, what, fame, fortune, and women, right? Yeah. So he let the eventual downfall of his crew happen all because he wanted some ass.
Mm-hmm.
He could have had any girl he wanted. Everybody, he had women hanging all over him every time he went inside a spot. Everybody knew who he was. They all wanted him. But he had to have that one. And I feel like that's the fatal flaw, you know, of a character like that, that hubris that says, you know, I can have this one. It doesn't matter. That's my brother's girl, my best friend's girl. I can have this and he'll be okay with it. So just because of that one decision, I feel like it negated all of his business genius and savvy. So that was the one problem I had with him as a character. For as smart as he was just dumb as hell when it came to practical stuff. So that makes me think about Nino Brown. In terms of Wesley Snipes' characters, where does he rank on your list of favorite Wesley Snipes characters?
Oh, damn, you went there.
Ooh. You know, that's actually a really tough one. But I'm probably going to have to stick with Nino Brown and probably right behind it just for the hell of it. Throw him late.
that's okay. I'm a
because I just like it was the first taste of black superhero-ness. So it felt like it meant more at the time. So I really revered Wesley Snipes for doing some comic book-ish type stuff on the screen because we didn't get a lot. We didn't get a lot of looks. So it as a child, it meant more. But Nino Brown's probably my favorite one.
All right. I can't say it's my favorite, but it's up there. My favorite is Simon Phoenix.
Oh, yeah. I had a feeling. Yeah.
Nino Brown would be my second favorite. I think if I had to rank characters, it would be Simon Phoenix, Nino Brown. Third would probably be Sid from White Man Can't Jump, then Blade would be fourth, And then if I had to round out a top five, just because I like the movie and the corniness of some early 90s action movies, I'll throw John Cutter in there, Passenger 57.
See, you took the words right from me. You know, I had those three. Demolition Man, you know, Nino Brown, of course, and Sidney Dean from White Man Can't Jump. I was struggling with it, which is why I included the question, because for me, I couldn't come up with a clear-cut answer. I'm like, it depends on my mood, what day I'm watching, because it could change, you know, because those are his three best characters to me out of all the movies he's made. So I'd probably say they're all 1A, B, and C. I mean, I can't really pick one, but...
I'll throw a dark horse in there. I wouldn't change my top five, but it's right up there. Willie Mays Hayes.
Oh, that's smooth right there.
Good. Like that would be kind of, that would jump off that next tier. But I think that's often forgotten how he was in Major League.
And while we talking about Wesley playing the character, I felt like when I was rewatching it today, actually, that scene when they're having a shootout in the warehouse, I feel like that was the first glimpse of Wesley Snipes, the action star. And it looks so seamless and real. Like the way he just dropped the sins down from the rafters, like hanging upside down and slits the cop's throat. And then he's playing the dead body and just takes it off and sticks the knife right in the other cop's chin. I was like, that seems so smooth and effortless. It didn't look fake or forced. Like, this man was a natural.
Had to be. It had to be. Like, this movie turned him into an action star.
Yeah.
It probably wasn't meant to be, but just the depth of who Nino Brown was and all that you saw from him in the movie, I could see the potential of different things that you could do with Wesley Snipes. So it's no surprise to me that after this role, he got the opportunity not only to do some other stuff, like, you know, I'm not surprised. What did I just say? Jungle Fever? I'm not surprised by that because he had already done Mo Better Blues and stuff like that before. But you talking about Passenger 57, Boiling Point, Rising Sun, Demolition Man, like that string of movies came because of this role right here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So speaking of scenes, what's your favorite scene from the movie? Start with you, Sean.
Damn, that's hard. The end. I love the ending of this movie. Like, from the courtroom and the speech, like the whole I'm not guilty joint. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I'm not guilty. You're the one who's guilty. The lawmakers, the politicians, the Colombian drug lords, all you who lobby against making drugs legal. Just like you did with alcohol during the Prohibition. You're the one who's guilty. I mean, come on, let's kick the ballistics here. Ain't no Uzis made in Harlem. I mean, not one of us in here owns a poppy field. This thing is bigger than Nino Brown. This is big business. This is the American way.
I'm sure that the court was enlightened by your geopolitical tirade, Mr. Brown. Unfortunately, society at large is not on trial here. You are Mr. Brown. Were you or were you not head of the narcotics consortium, the murderously bloody CMB?
Yes.
I could not hear you. Would you please speak up, Mr. Brown?
Yes, I was a member. But I was forced into this way of life. Hey, look, I've been dealing drugs ever since I was 12 years old. See, I didn't have the chances that you have, Miss Hawkins. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, Miss Hawkins. I mean, I wanted to get out, but they threatened to kill my mother.
Who are you talking about, Mr. Brown? What they?
They. Look at it. Kareem Akbar. That's right, the educated brother from the bank. He's the real head of the CMB. The brains behind the whole thing. I told you, this thing is bigger than Nino Brown, and I gotta listen. If I'm going down, I'm taking a whole lot of people with me.
Like, just the, you know, just the arrogance of that whole shit. You know, and just the way, yo, he played all of them. In the end, he was about to win. Even though once he got the sentence, and when something like that happens and they immediately go to the outsides of the courtroom. And like, I've been watching Law and Order long enough to know somebody about to get shot. Kind of felt like it was about to go down. But even then, I wouldn't have guessed that it would have been the old man that came back and did it.
Yeah, true.
So
he tried it once.
He tried it once. But, you know, I don't think after Ice-T got him out of there, we didn't see the old man again until that point. So I really thought that was all we were going to see of Bill Cobbs after Ice-T took him out.
Junior! You hold up, Pop.
Get your butt out of here right now.
I can take care of you too, old man.
You can't take care of me. You better take care of yourself because you're an ignorant bastard. You're committing genocide on your own people with your silk suits and fancy cars.
Yeah, you better step off, Grandpa.
You're an idol worshiper. You're killing your own people with them little white devils you putting in that bottle. You idolater. Reverend Oates, what you doing in here with this drug scum?
You shut up! You need to let me smoke this old dude.
Look at you. In the next 2 years, they'll be marking your gravesite. Me? I'll be right here.
All you kids, get out of here. These kids? All these people gather around you like you God Almighty. Like you love them. Devils ain't got no love, man. You killing your own people.
And what can you offer them, huh? What, another I Have a Dream speech? Some of that same shit you ripping off to me? Look where we at. Not a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. Use the fool, old man.
So to have Bill Cobbs as the old man, the one that takes him out, and then just the, you know, dramatic fall. Like, to me, that was symbolic. You got this dude who's on top of the world. But then the movie ends with him flat on his back at the bottom while everybody's looking down on him. Like, take me out. I don't need to see nothing else. I'm good. So if I had to talk about scenes, I have other favorite moments. Some of them are kind of fucked up and I feel bad that I laughed. I'm gonna be real honest. I'm, you know, just cause we all, it was wrong as hell. So let me say this was wrong. But I was like, damn, he just used that kid as a shield.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah.
The wedding.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That was intense. I'm not gonna lie, bro. Like, you a real asshole, bro, for that one. Straight up. But that shit was funny, bro. Like, I cannot believe this nigga, right?
Man, this nigga is a little girl. It's a bulletproof shield.
Yeah, I thought it was funny because at first it looks like he's going to save
her. Yeah, he's going to save her. Right.
It looks like he's going to save her. No, he's protecting himself.
Oh my God.
Ooh. You know what? It's two scenes. For one, I think my favorite scene is probably when the Italian mafia guy comes back with the doll and the figurine. As soon as he opens it up and he just smacks him in the head with that shit. It's a declarative statement. We are not going to take this shit from anybody. And I felt a little bit emotional because I know what it represented. So I love that scene in particular. And oh my gosh, it just slipped my mind. I'm trying to think. There was, man, see, now it's really hard because sometimes I think about the music scenes, like the club where we have, you know, Fab Five Freddy and Flavor Flav. It's like, I love all that energy with those. So that's kind of his own separate category because those are set up so well and it seems so real because if you were to go into a club, a nice club, you're going to have people like that in the club. You know, it wasn't just a guy playing a DJ or playing an MC. It was an actual MC in there. So it felt so much more real. It's like, oh, these dudes be in the hypest parties with the biggest celebrities, get the best treatment. And, you know, they're like, they're real like street heroes, quote unquote, as we talk about them back in the day.
So for me, one of my favorite scenes was the montage that they show when they were taking over the Carter. Mm-hmm. And I really loved it because the way they synced up the music with the montage, and it starts out with troops singing Living for the City.
Yeah.
You know, you can't even tell where it transitions over to LeVert, you know, finishing it up and For the Love of the Money and whatever they're singing. And it all matched up so perfectly. I'm like, that scene, it was so perfectly filmed, and it actually probably saved them a lot of film time because they didn't have to go into detail about what happened. They were able to just put it together in a perfect montage.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love that scene right there. And I'd say the second one for me, and it's probably, I'm looking back in retrospect, but the infamous scene after they got hit and he drops the $5 line. Now, I like it because Martin used it on his show.
Yes.
On the episode.
Yeah. I literally just watched that episode like 2 days ago, which was funny. I was like, oh, damn, that's where that came from.
Yes. Man, Martin with that fake ass dog, bro, took me out.
Yeah, I love that callback, bro. I was like, this man, I love it.
Now, you're all probably wondering why I called you here.
Hell yeah, you dragged us out in the middle of a stormy night. What's wrong with you, fool? And why did you want us all in black?
I'm setting my scene. Now, I have news about my CD player.
Oh, I knew it!
Sit down! Go sit your $5 ass down before I make change.
Oh, you want some $5? You make a change? $5 ass worth?
Martin, just what is your dues, please?
I know who stole my CD player. And the person's in this room right now. Anybody want to tell me who? Come on now. Don't you all speak at once.
Sick.
Down. Hold it. Now, come on now. Huh? Don't anybody know nothing? Huh? Down. Yeah. I mean, come on now. Gina, Cole. Pam, Tommy, I know somebody knows something. Yeah, ain't that right? Yeah. Sit.
Lay. I wanted to move on to some of the lesser known characters. Well, not lesser known, but more of the unsung heroes of the movie, the supporting characters. So who do you feel is the best supporting character in this film?
Who? I guess, like, who qualifies as supporting? Because even though the story is about Nino Brown, this is like an ensemble movie. Whoa. Because Ice-T gets a lot of screen time. Chris Rock gets a lot of screen time. You know, G-Money, he gets a little bit. Like, everybody gets screen time on a solo basis in one way or another. So I kind of need to know, like, who qualifies. Are those
so when I think about who are the leads in this movie, I see it as Wesley, Ice-T, Alan Payne, Chris Rock. Like, those are my four mains. So if I'm thinking, like, supporting cast, I'm thinking about anybody else. I think those four are the four that you get the most out of story-wise and individually. We know about those four characters the most individually. So when I think about who was the best supporting, there's a few people. Bill Cobbs, just in the couple of scenes that he had. I think we forget about his scene where he went to the police station and a white man was ignoring him. How many times as black that, folks do, can we relate to that? Yo,
okay, that was the scene. I'm about to say, you want to finish your thought, but I remember now why I love that scene.
Yeah.
Because the sergeant, mm-hmm. with the hair, his lines are so good.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he might be the best supporting character, even though he's only in two scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But the way he comes off and the shit that he says, perfect. Every mm-hmm. single time.
Yeah, so Bill Cobbs, Vanessa Williams. I can't prop up that character of Keisha enough.
What?
Yeah.
And Vanessa Williams just played it perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Vanessa Williams as Keisha is probably doing the most with the least
mm-hmm.
throughout the movie, because she's kind of a representation of us if we were like not privy to everything that's going on. It's like you just living your life. So when the crack comes in, she was like, this what they going crazy over? She look like mm-hmm. some cracked up pieces of soap. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, what is this really going to mean? You know, she's questioning things, but she's like, all right, this is what it is. And you get a feeling like as things go along, she kind of just goes with the wave. And then of course she's the killer. She's like, I'm all about this life. And so she's a representation of the progression too throughout the movie. And she's not even in it that much. But I could gather all of that just from the way she pulls off each one of her scenes.
And I would just add, out of all the characters in this film, like Keisha would be that one that at the top of the list that I would have wanted to know more about.
You see, for me, I was a big fan of the Dutter Man.
That dude was hilarious to me. Like, he really made me, he was like the big dumb oaf, like the lovable guy who knew he was the butt of the joke, but he was in on it.
Yeah,
you know, he ain't take it personal. He's just like, all right, this is my role in the crew. I'm a rock with it. And that's that. And I love that about him. He was a guy I was really rooting for him to survive the movie. You know, I really wanted him to live.
Nah, he got it. He wasn't going to make it. You know, they always shoot the driver, man. The driver always gets shot.
Yeah.
You know, you the first one to get got almost.
Shot my man in the back while he was hanging.
I mean, he ain't want to let go, bro. Hey, sure. And that dude was so damn strong. How you get shot up in the back? You hit the ground after falling all them stories. And then still got the energy to go and grab the Uzi. You know, try to do some more killing. Dude,
yo, indestructible. Speaking of supporting characters, did y'all recognize the tech, the police officer that was doing all the tech stuff? Like,
yeah.
The Asian cat?
Yeah.
Like, but that's old buddy from Romeo Must Die.
Yep.
The one that Jet Li was fighting at the end. That's him.
That's a crazy, like, full circle thing. It's like, I was like, oh, I did recognize him. You know, it took me a minute, but I was like, oh, okay.
Mm. All right, so earlier we were talking about quotables from the movie, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you were an assassin and you had to drop one quote before taking somebody out. Would you drop the $5 line, am I my brother's keeper, or your soul is required in hell? Which one would be your phrase?
Your soul is required in hell. You can't get no.
I'm about to say rock and bye, baby, not a choice.
You know what? Throw that in there. Hell yeah.
That would be second for me. Your soul is required by the devil. And you can't get no harder than that.
That made me think of every time I think about that line, it makes me think of Samuel Jackson quoting that Bible verse in Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Furious.
I'm trying to think of which one is colder.
Man.
I think Sam's, because to go off on a whole Bible rant before
the whole verse.
Now, you know, this is just one statement. Your soul, even though it hit deep, Sam is literally reciting a whole Bible verse to you before he fucks you up. That's cold. That's cold.
Yeah.
But then who knows, man? My corny ass will probably just say yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, at somebody.
Oh, God. Wow. Take it to Die Hard or whatever.
See, it's the problem with the $5 line is it doesn't work for an assassin. That works before I take your ass out. That's like a minute before. It's like, sit your $5 ass before I make change. All right, motherfucker, about to make some ones. Bow. Like, you know, you need another line to go with that shit to be an assassin line.
That's a little follow, by the way, goddamn.
But that's probably my favorite line, though, to do something to, like, to be intimidating. But Rockabye Baby is right there. You know, it's like night, night, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Any of them lines, I think it's right there.
You know, I wasn't even thinking about Rockabye Baby. For me, it was... Well, but not before you said it. For me, it was "Your soul is required in hell," but I like that Rockabye Baby line too. Mm. And I love the way Nino Brown used to be like, yo, lullaby his ass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, shit. Cancel that bitch.
Cancel that bitch.
I get another one.
Damn. There's so many this might be the most quotable movie.
But yeah, man, this one is chock full of quotes.
And the most definitely. So now that you mentioned music, before we wrap this up, I want to talk about the soundtrack. All right, so we talked about it before, probably before recording that. This was a cold-ass soundtrack. A lot of hits. The music was incorporated perfectly into the movie. You know, perfectly. So if you had to pick one song, what's your favorite on the soundtrack?
I knew you were going there.
Well, you got to.
So it has to be the one that I play the most. And I go hard for I'm Dreaming.
Me too.
Yeah. I go hard for I'm Dreaming. So shout out to Christopher Williams for his hit.
Did he have another one after that or no?
I kind of put Christopher Williams in that one hit wonder.
Mm.
You know, I know he had an album after New Jack City came out and one before, but I don't remember much after that.
Right, right.
This is a tough one. I fool with Dreaming, but if there was actually a song on the soundtrack that I would play, it's probably I Want to Sex You Up by Color Me Bad, which is just an ill song.
Yeah.
That everything about that song works. And you can put that almost in any movie. And if you do the scene right, it just works. I mean, literally, it's called I Want to Sex You Up. Like, you put it to some love making and it really sets it. And that, and you know, I'm not even going to get into the other reasons why that song resonates with me to that day. But I'll just say that, you know, it's a good feeling. It's a great, great song.
I will add that Queen Latifah had bars on her shit.
She did. Definitely. Like, I feel like this, like, go ahead.
No, this, go ahead. This has nothing to do with the soundtrack, but I'm about to write it down so I don't forget it.
What's that?
It's a cameo I just thought of. Did y'all, so when they were in the court scene at the end and directly sitting behind Ice-T and was Nick beside Ice-T?
Yeah, I think so.
So whoever was beside, I'm going to say it's Nick. I think it was Nick. Mario Van Peebles, you're right. It was Mario Van Peebles. So directly behind them was old girl who played Nettie in The Color Purple.
Dang, I did not notice that at all. That one went over my head.
Like, literally, like, Nettie at the end of The Color Purple and all her African get up right behind them. Mm. That's always stuck out to me because after The Color Purple, that's the only thing that I can remember seeing her in. I don't remember seeing her in anything else. Not off the top of my head.
I was about to say, we had this conversation before, but I've never seen The Color Purple.
Man, you got to see The Color Purple at least once.
I said I would, but then they just kept coming out with new movies.
I said I would, but then I didn't.
Yeah. Then I get these, like, new video games, and then they have, like, basketball, football.
Stop it.
Like, it's just...
Stop it. You're just getting worse and worse. So I just pulled up her IMDb. Oh, shit. She was married to John Singleton for like a year. Didn't know that. But you look at her filmography, like I said, she didn't do much after Color Purple. Like, they literally have her. This is what it says for New Jack City. 1991, New Jack City, courtroom spectator, uncredited.
Damn.
That's about it. Yeah, let me see. I'm trying to see if there's anything else on this soundtrack that I might be overlooking. Not at all. I see Al B. Sure has a producer credit. I didn't see that one.
All right. Well, that being said, Sean, it's about that time, bro. It's time to move on to these awards.
Cool, let's do it. So y'all know how we do it. Every film that we review, we give an award to it based off our personal enjoyment of the film. So if this is one of our favorite films, we absolutely loved it, we give it an image award. We think it's good, not great, we'll hook it up with a Soul Train award. We think it was okay, not bad, we'll give it a Source award. If it was terrible, we ain't feeling it, get this shit out of here, it'll get a BET award. Kind of like a participation trophy. So I'll toss it to Derek. This is your pick to review New Jack City. So you make the first pick, bro.
I mean, I think this clearly has to get an Image Award just based on the quotables alone. I mean, if I could give it two, I would give it two. You know, but it's getting that Image Award from me.
What about you, CL?
I'm going to have to 100% agree. this definitely gets an Image Award. This is an all-time classic. Some of the best acting. You know, when we, and I'm going to say this about Black movies just in general. We don't always get the best acting for our stories because whoever's in charge just doesn't have the eye or whatever it is. Something always falls short. But when I say everyone in this movie did their part, they absolutely did it. And I can very much appreciate that for a movie that's our story. So yes, Image Award, Image Award, Image Award all day, man.
Cool. So the way this works out, if all the hosts gives it an Image Award, we throw the film into the Madcap Hall of Fame. So we three films in, and fellas, we already got two films in the Hall of Fame. We already put Coming to America in there. And I'm going to round it out with another Image Award. Welcome to the Hall of Fame, New Jack City.
We need the hand claps. The hoorays. Where the soundboard at? Woo, bring it in.
Right.
All right, before we get out of here and cancel this bitch like Nino Brown, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Madcap Pod. And check us out next week, episode 4. We're going to take it ahead 2 years to the summer of 1993 and review John Singleton's Poetic Justice, starring Janet Jackson and the late, great Tupac Shakur. I'm also excited because we're going to be welcoming our first guest host. Joining us next week will be my fam from the Millennial Happy Hour podcast, Mel and Britt. I'm excited to have them on. Yo, y'all going to really enjoy the vibe these ladies give off. We're about to have some real fun on the podcast next week. So, for my co-hosts, CL and Derek, this is your boy Sean, and the crew will catch you next week on the Madcap Movie Review Podcast. Peace.
If you listen to me closely, I'll tell you what I know. Storm clouds are gathering. The wind is gonna blow. The race of man is suffering, and I can hear the moan. Cause nobody, but nobody can make it out here alone.
Her name is Justice.
The only reason why I love you is because I was in the county jail. You sent me all them nice poems.
To escape the violence of the streets, she needed the poetry in her heart.
You've got to move on. There's another man out there somewhere.
His name is Lucky.
What y'all niggas doing?
Looking for some busters to jack.
To face the madness around him, all he had was the music in his soul. Fate brought them together.
This is Justice. Justice, this is Lucky. And you already know Chicago.
What's up, baby?
Baby.
Anger kept them apart.
I'm a Black woman, okay? I deserve respect.
Walk your ass home.
But for both of them,
girl, you know he tripping because he like you.
The road ahead was the only way to leave the pain behind.
I heard from a friend today,
Columbia Pictures presents a story about losing your fear and finding your way.
What do you write about?
I was in my heart.
What's that?
Janet Jackson, Tupac Shakur, Poetic Justice. From the creator of Boys in the Hood.
Rock a ball, baby.